You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network, part of Sports Illustrated, giving you daily NFL Draft, Dynasty, and Devy Fantasy Football podcasts.
Welcome inside the Inside the War Room podcast, presented by Sports Illustrated on the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network. I am your host, Dante Colonelli, and I am riding solo once again this week. Saray should be back from vacation for next week, so we can talk NFL and college football next week. Thankfully, on this show, we are going to be recapping week one of the college football season and also just doing a little bit of a preview because we had some interesting news come out for that Thursday nighter, Dallas and Tampa today. So we'll dive into that a little bit on this show. We finally have, you know, week zero was a nice primer. You know, there was some okay games, some okay teams, but week one, we really had it all. And just a reminder, this is a daily podcast feed filled with analysts and experts providing unmatched insight into the NFL, college football, and fantasy football. We provide this feed for you ad-free. And all we ask in return is that you leave us a five-star rating and check out all of our fantastic written content at si.com/NFL/draft. Speaking of the draft, let's get into it. Week one, obviously, is a big time on draft Twitter for people to overreact to the play of college football players. And we got a heavy dose of that all week, especially when looking at the 2022 quarterback class. It is a class that has already kind of dusted everyone up on Twitter. There is a lot of debate on, you know, which of the top quarterbacks are legit, where they should be stacked relative to one another. And one of the top guys, he got to go on Friday, September 3rd. That was Sam Howell, the quarterback from UNC. He's a lot of people's quarterback too, and he is very much in play to be a first-round pick, someone who's drawn a lot of Baker Mayfield comps. I see a little bit of Carson Wentz in his game. They went up against Virginia Tech, number 10 overall team in the country, North Carolina, mind you. And they lost 17-10 to Virginia Tech at Blacksburg. It was good to see the Enter Sandman intro again. I feel like I haven't heard that in a really long time. So that was cool. And Sam Howell was seeing Sandman the entire game. He did not look good. I just think, frankly, there's not really a ton of analysis that I can provide. His offensive line wasn't doing him a ton of favors, but he made some poor decisions. He missed some throws. He held the ball too long. So he struggled. He didn't look particularly great either. And UNC got knocked off. And we saw a bunch of top 25 teams get knocked off, but I think that one was a big surprise to start off. UNC obviously had such high hopes after, you know, last season being so strong. But Hal, man, here's the thing. Hal, for me, always has been a second-round quarterback. And if you're not familiar with the way that I do grades, you know, I don't factor positional value. So, I only put a quarterback in the first round if I think that they're a bona fide franchise talent. You know, guys I think can come in right away, flip the franchise on its head, you know, increase the win total by 4, 5, 6 games, get a team to the playoffs. I don't see that with Sam Howell. I see a perfectly fine quarterback, someone who can win with a lot of good stuff around him. I think he's got good arm strength. I think that he is fairly accurate, but he struggles under pressure. And all the concepts that they're running at UNC are incredibly simple. I don't know how they translate to the NFL. So personally, for me, the way that he played against Virginia Tech was not so much of a shock. If you watch his film from last year, this is what you saw. And Virginia Tech is a legit team with legit athletes at defense. And they're, you know, look like they're going to be pretty solid this year. They've got a nice run game. They've got some good skill position players. UNC's offensive line couldn't handle them up front, and Sam Howell is not enough. You know, he's not that dynamic of a talent where he's going to be able to overcome an offensive line that can't compete in the trenches. So that, obviously, for me, was not the biggest shocker in the world. Moving on to Saturday, another big one. Oklahoma played. Spencer Rattler, my quarterback, won. He struggled a little bit. You look at the box score, and you see 304, you see a couple of touchdowns, you see an Oklahoma victory in a game that was very, very close. Tulane's got a little bit of juice, it looks like. They've got some pros on defense, some future pros on offense as well. Maybe their quarterback, Michael Pratt, is someone to watch for 2023. I know we have a lot of Dynasty listeners. He seems like a guy. I cover that conference. You know, I think he might be one of the better quarterbacks in the AAC. But Spencer Rattler was the one that everyone had eyes on. And I mean, the numbers look fine. You watch the game, just a lot of the same mistakes. Rattler, very clear arm strength. He is a good athlete. He's not, you know, he's not Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson out there, but he's a good athlete. He can move, he can run, he can scramble, make guys miss. But you look at his film and you see the same stuff. It's throwing into windows that are already covered. It's fading back in the pocket when you don't have to, throwing off your back foot, not really respecting defenses. And again, it's only one game. So, you know, I'm not going to overreact to Spencer Rattler. I'm not going to overreact to Sam Howell. You know, I didn't go through and just, you know, completely switch my quarterback rankings off of this week. But, you know, one of the concerns that Saray and I both had when we talked about the 2022 quarterback class this summer was that, you know, all of these guys need to take a jump. Some guys need to take a bigger jump than others. Some guys, you know, Hal needed to take a jump in his, you know, acumen, right? Like the way that he reads the field, the way that he sees the field. But the North Carolina offense, we don't think that it's really going to give him an opportunity to do that. Rattler, on the other hand, it's all in his court. We got to stop fading back. We got to stop throwing off our back foot. Buddy, have you ever thought about stepping up in the pocket? Look, I'm not a very good quarterback. Never was, you know, just not my thing. I was a bad slot receiver. I wasn't a bad quarterback. I was an awful quarterback. But like, man, we got to get stepping up in the pocket. For the love of God, stop fading back. You know, you're taking 21 step drops on a 5-step drop play. Like, it's just not necessary. So he's got to clean that up. He was a little bit shaky. We'll see if he kind of can steady the tide. We saw that from him last year, right? Where early in the season, he was this very timid, scattered quarterback. And then over the course of the season, he kind of ironed it out. Well, hopefully he has that trajectory and hopefully it happens a little bit quicker this year as opposed to last year. Some of the other big quarterback prospects also played yesterday. Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati had a very, very big day. He looked... I'll be honest, I've been a Desmond Ridder hater on this podcast. And, you know, they put up 49. He went against Miami of Ohio. He went for 295 yards through the air. He threw a really, really nice deep touchdown pass early in the game. I believe it was like 60 yards in the air and ended up being like a 70 plus yard touchdown or something. It was a dart. Never question the arm strength or athleticism with Desmond Ridder. And he did appear to be a little bit more accurate on throws that mattered. He didn't make a ton of them, but he did get the ball down the field accurately. Like I said, that long 70-plus yard touchdown. Really nice throw down the field. You like to see that from him. I'm still skeptical. Like I said, with Rattler and Hal, I'm not going to change my opinion on them off of one game. But I will say the trajectory at which these guys played, you know, right now, if you're starting to put together that puzzle, the first piece, I mean, Desmond Ridder looked like he might have improved a little bit. Does that make him better than Hal? Does that make him better than Rattler? I don't know. It's too early to say. But based on what we saw on Saturday, he looks like he's at least improving a little bit. Now, he has to keep that going the rest of the season against significantly, you know, more difficult opponents. We'll see if he does that. Now, the top quarterback prospect that I really want to talk about as far as guys who played well was Carson Strong. If you have not seen the Nevada versus Cal highlights, go on YouTube right now, search up Nevada offense versus Cal, and just watch Carson Strong, Nevada's quarterback, zing the ball around the yard for four quarters. Nevada beat Cal, by the way. Power 5 win for the Wolfpack. Strong it just had a crazy good game. Deep balls, honey hole shots versus cover two, layered in the middle of the field throws, arm strength, accuracy, touch, everything that you could possibly ask for. Strong looked like QB1 on Saturday. Now, again, it doesn't matter. It's 1 week. I'm not overreacting. I'm not saying that Strong is my QB1, although he is for some people that I have a ton of respect for. So it, you know, wouldn't shock me if I end up at that place. But Strong looked like QB1 this week. At the end of the day, he had the best game against Cal. He looked just so good. And you see the natural tools, but you also see someone who understands reading defenses pre-snap, where to go with the ball. He understands, you know, reading coverages, reading safeties who move post-snap. I think Strong, you know, he handles his own protections for Nevada, right? Not a lot of other quarterbacks in this class do that. You see a lot of that pre-snap acumen that so many guys in college are missing, specifically in this quarterback class, and Strong has that. So if he can put together the accuracy, you know, if he can be a little bit more creative and he can continue to push the ball around the field like he did against Cal, where he made, I mean, like 4, 5, 6, like, wow, like NFL really high caliber throws. If he can continue to do that all season, I think he will end up pushing for that QB1 spot with Spencer Rattler. I just think that he's got all the talent in the world, and that Cal film is great. Like I said, if you haven't seen it yet, go to YouTube, click on it, come back to this and tell me that I'm wrong. Malik Willis for Liberty as well also had a very good day. He looks a little bit more controlled in the pocket. I thought that he was less scattered. His footwork was a little bit better. Moving away from quarterback talk, I always want to get that out of the way. I like talking quarterbacks, and it's a solo show, so who's going to stop me? The big game really of the week was Georgia and Clemson, number 3 versus number 5, prime time, ESPN, big game, Kirk Herbstreit on the call. We got a defensive slugfest, 10-3 Georgia, the victors over number 3 Clemson. JT Daniels in this game, obviously Georgia, almost their entire defense is going to get drafted into the NFL either this year, next year, or the year after that. Clemson, obviously playing their first game without Trevor Lawrence on the roster in quite a long time. 3-year starter, pretty much, Lawrence at Clemson. And they went to DJ Uiagalelei, the quarterback. And I'm sorry if I butchered that. I really did practice it several times before the show, so I hope I didn't butcher it. But he came in. We're just going to call him DJU for the rest of the show, so I don't have to. So I will eventually butcher it if I keep having to say it. So we're going to stick with DJU for the rest of the show. He filled in for Lawrence in the Notre Dame game last year and a couple other games when Lawrence was out with COVID. He looked really good. Obviously, they lost that Notre Dame game, but really not much of the fault of DJU. He looked really good. You come into this Georgia game, defensive line for Georgia, Devontae Wyatt, Jordan Davis, Adam Anderson up front, just absolutely wrecked Clemson's offensive line. And DJU had no idea what to do when he got pressured. He got himself sacked several times. So the three names I just mentioned off the top, Wyatt, Davis, and the edge rusher, Adam Anderson. Adam Anderson. I almost butchered his name, and that's an easy one. So that's where I'm at here, guys. But those three guys right there, top of the line defensive line prospects. Davis has a chance to be the top interior defensive lineman in a not very good IDL class. Anderson has a lot of competition in the edge group, but he's one of the few guys, and I think where he separates himself, and you saw this if you watched the game, he's got bend, he's got speed, he's a little bit more of that outside track rusher. A lot of the top guys, the Aiden Hutchinsons, the George Karafalatis from Purdue, even Thibodeau, the edge from Oregon, who, by the way, had a monster day before he got hurt. He's one of the top prospects in this class overall. But looking at that edge group, those top three guys, they're power rushers. They're going to go through people. They're going to bull rush. They're going to win with inside counter. You know, Anderson's got some bend. He's got some speed. He's got some dip. I think that separates him from some of these guys and could push him into the first round. I mean, he's got length, he's got size, he's got burst. Really, really impressive showing from that Georgia defensive line. And obviously the defense as a whole was quite good. Lewis Cian back there at safety, he's another guy to watch this season as well. And I'm sure we'll pick up on some others as the season goes. On the flip side, Clemson's defense was good. Obviously they played quite well. Andrew Booth, the corner, woo, top 5 player in the class, guys. He's really, really good. Fluid, good size, good ball skills, man coverage, zone coverage. He really showed some good tackling. He was making a bunch of plays in the flats. Now, you know, JT Daniels, he's a quarterback who throws into the flats a lot. He's got a little bit of a noodle arm, in my opinion. I know that that's a controversial take. I don't really think he can push the ball down the field like you need to be able to, but they attack the flats a ton in that scheme, regardless of Daniel's acumen. And Booth made a ton of plays on tackles coming up to the line of scrimmage, disengaging from blocks. He's incredibly, incredibly impressive. And I think that he's someone that honestly could push Derek Stingley for cornerback one. And I think that his performance was just phenomenal. On the other side of the ball for Clemson, the wide receiver had a nice night. Nagda, I thought he was pretty good. Nada, I think that he played well. He's a guy to keep an eye on. But if DJ Uiagalelei plays like that the rest of the year, they'll probably run through the ACC. You know what? Maybe they'll end up 12-1. But if that's how he's going to play against teams that are good, frankly, Clemson's going to get bounced in the first round of the CFP again. It's just not like he was bad. I don't really know how to say it. Wasn't accurate, didn't make good decisions, held the ball too long, got himself sacked. So Clemson has to figure that out. I didn't think the play calling did him any favors. I know Dan Orlovsky tweeted this, and this was kind of a conversation that a lot of people had around Trevor Lawrence last year, was like, hey, the Clemson offense kind of, like, the play calling, the scheme kind of sucks. It's not very good. And honestly, I think I came around on that rewatching the Clemson Georgia game from the broadcast angle. You know, it's just so simple, and it just doesn't seem like, you know, they're really getting creative or they're trying to maximize some of the playmakers that they have. I don't know if that's a product of a really poor offensive line. Clearly those guys, I mean, look, there were some sacks that were on DJU. There were some sacks that were on the line, but clearly that line hasn't been good. I don't think they were good last year either. Ohio State killed them in the first round of the CFP, and Georgia killed them this week. And again, those are teams with pros, but when you're Clemson, those are the teams that you're going to be going up against. So I imagine that they still run through the ACC. I'm not panicking about the Tigers. I think they'll still win that conference, especially, you know, North Carolina doesn't look as good as they're supposed to look. Alabama just, I mean, dismantled Miami. I mean, I don't even know if the Hurricanes showed up. Saray didn't. Ironic. He's a Hurricanes fan. But no, he's got a legitimate excuse. Unlike the Hurricane, did not have a very legitimate excuse for getting torched by Bama. So I think Clemson runs through that conference, but we'll see what happens. I think that it is fair to be concerned about the play calling in the offensive line for Clemson, but Andrew Booth, really, really good. Those D linemen that I talked about for Georgia, if you're looking at this from an NFL draft perspective. I wanted to make this a bit of a shorter show since it's just me. I mean, I don't want to listen to myself talk a ton longer. So the last thing I want to touch on is we got a little bit of news for Thursday night, Dallas and Tampa. That's going to be kicking off the season. Dallas is going to be without guard Zach Martin, who was put on the COVID list. Huge loss, obviously. Martin, I think some people who really study offensive line will say that he's already a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, that's how good he is. He's definitely, I think he's the best guard in the league, personally. He's an incredibly, incredibly good football player that not a lot of casual fans care about, but they should, because he's amazing. You know, he's a big reason why Ezekiel Elliott has the contract he has, quite frankly. So he's going to be out. And when you look at the flip side of the ball of that game, obviously, NFL week one kickoff, Tampa Bay, Dallas, right? That Tampa Bay D line, man, and Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea against a backup guard. Woo! I'm a little bit worried if I'm Dak Prescott. Vita Vea had a big year last year, and, you know, Ndamukong Suh's getting older. He's not as dynamic maybe as he was when he was in Detroit as a young guy, but he's still very good. You know, if you give him an inch, he's going to take it. And then I don't know who Dallas is going to be slotting in as that backup, but that is going to be a big factor in that game, at least in my opinion. So that was the news from today for that one. Again, Thursday night, the NFL season kicks off, Dallas and Tampa Bay. That is actually going to do it for me. Like I said, I wanted to keep this a shorter show. So thank you for listening to this episode of Inside the War Room, presented by Sports Illustrated's NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network. We will be back with more Inside the War Room next week. But be sure to tune in tomorrow to hear from our friends of the Prospect Prophets. They are our in-house scouts who really, really do a great job breaking down film. So be sure to tune into that tomorrow. Again, I will be back hopefully with Saray next Monday. Enjoy the start of the NFL season, and I'll talk to you Monday. Peace.